Hello, everyone. Feels like a long, long time since I've been here for the 7 Steps to Awakening. I don't know how long it's been. I think I did it the night after the fall retreat, and I don't think I've done it since then. So it's been a long time. I've been to Costa Rica since then. But now I am home for 11 weeks in a row, which for me is a very long time. So I'm really excited about being home for 11 weeks in a row without a trip. My next trip is going to Tiruvannamalai, India, in February. But until then, as far as I know, there are no trips. I will be home. Tonight, the 7 Steps to Awakening, we are going to start with quote number, I believe it's 739. Let me double check that. Yeah, quote number 739, which is in step 3 and coming from the Yoga Vasistha. But before I dive in, what I'm going to do is play a song. And in fact, I think I have a song about diving in. Let me see if I can find that song, and I'll just play that. Do I have it? Oh, maybe I don't have it. Maybe it's on my YouTube playlist instead of my. Well, let me just. Yeah. Do I jump over to my YouTube playlist? I guess I do. So I'm going to jump over to my YouTube playlist. It'll just take a second. I think the song about diving in is on my YouTube playlist instead of on my iTunes, which is what I had open. All right, here it is. It's by Stephen Walters, and it's called Dive Right In. So let's play this as kind of the opening prayer, the opening stillness, before we go into the teaching.
I remember my first trip to the ocean, how the big waves just keep rolling in, how the first one knocked me right over. I swallowed water and scraped up my shin. Then I waited in shallow water, just watched all the other kids swim. I saw this big wave start breaking. I couldn't believe it. I saw this one kid. You can try to run from the waves until we can't really live. Wouldn't it be better now to learn how to swim? It's a lot more fun to swim. You are the ocean, come on, let everybody just.
So let's dive right in. So I'm reading quote number 739 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. The Supreme Self is in the Supreme Self. The infinite in the infinite. The peace in peace. That is all there is. Neither I nor the world nor the mind. I'm being still because I don't know quite how to share what I think I'm going to share. So I'm just being with it and waiting until the words come. I've been listening to Awakening Together Radio a lot lately. I don't know if you guys know that we have radio now 24/7. So when the sanctuary is not being broadcast, there are different teachings being broadcast along with some music and a bit of humor and occasionally a documentary. But there are a lot of teachings being broadcast, and I've been listening to this Awakening Together Radio more lately. And so I've been hearing a lot more teachings. It's funny because the majority of my personal experience on this spiritual path has been reading quotes and going within and receiving clarity from within, or reading a book, you know, like A Course in Miracles, but again, going within and receiving clarity from within. I have not been very dependent on outer teachers and outer teachings. It's been a within journey with me. And so listening to all of these different teachings has been quite interesting. And, of course, if you listen to lots and lots of different teachings, even though the general genre of the teachings can be similar, the teachings themselves can have differences in them. You know, for example, one person will speak of awakening as something that, you know, maybe only 8 people on the planet are awake at a time. And someone else will speak about awakening as something that's happening to tens of thousands of people or even happening to the entire planet. And so what's happened for me as I'm listening to all of these different teachings Well, what's happening to me is the question that is coming up in my mind is a question of genuineness. What is genuine? That's the question. What is genuine? What is true? And where do we fool ourselves? And how can we know the difference? And this is not new for me. This comes around from time to time. So, you know, if you've listened to my teachings for a long time, then you know that this comes around from time to time. Because I don't really have an interest in being a spiritual person, being some kind of a spiritual powerhouse where, you know, people look up to me as some kind of a guru. You know, awakening together, becoming world famous. Although, you know, I won't stand in the way of that if that's meant to happen, but I don't sit around and think about that. That's not my goal. My goal has always been about genuineness, about truth. Nothing else. And as I've been contemplating this lately while listening to all of these different teachings, what I have really come to is I am very limited in what I can say I know to be true. You know, I can contemplate quotes like this quote, 739, that says there is no I, no world, no mind. And I can accept that as a possibility of what's true. Because, of course, you know, many other masters have taught the same thing. But if I'm to look at my direct experience and say, what do I know to be true? I can't go there. At least not now. Now, this doesn't mean that someday I won't be saying from my own direct experience, there is no world, there is no mind. But it seems foolish to spout with the mouth, there is no world, there is no mind, when I don't know that to be a fact. It seems that if genuineness is what I'm interested in, then I don't want to go into believing. There's something not genuine about believing. Pontius Pilate. Remember Pontius Pilate and his conversation with Jesus? You know, Jesus said something about the truth. You know, like that, like he came because of the truth or something like that. And Pontius Pilate said, what is truth? In kind of a frustrated way. Yeah, what is truth? So if I look at my direct experience, what is absolutely genuine for me now, without making anything up, and without believing anything that I've read or anything that anybody else told me is truth, what do I know to be true right now? And I can say, I think, I want to look at this very carefully. I don't want to lie to myself or you. I can say that I know that I am not this Regina personality. I know that I am beyond this Regina personality. I can say that. I know this Regina personality is a limited, temporary experience. I also know the Regina personality is not real. I've observed it. I've observed its shifts and changes so that I know that it's, you know, there's like one kind of Regina in one situation and another kind of Regina in another situation, and it seems to be made by the moment or made by the situation. I can also say that the question, what am I? That inquiry, not the question itself, but the actual looking, the actual inward inquiry, seems like the most valuable question in the world. It seems like to me that the more I go in that direction, the more I realize there is a truth that is far beyond what appears to be here. And that's as far as I can go right now. Now, if I follow that inquiry all the way in, will I come back one day and say, there is no world, there is no mind? Maybe. But can I say right now, there is no world, there is no mind? I can't really say that. What I can say is that I am something different than I appear to be. Therefore, it makes sense that the world and the mind can be something different than they appear to be. And that a deep inward inquiry feels like the only way to really find out directly. So this quote says, the Supreme Self is in the Supreme Self, the infinite in the infinite, the peace in the peace. That is all there is, neither I nor the world nor the mind. And I'm okay with that as a possibility, but I am unwilling to adopt that as a belief. But I'm okay with it as a possibility, and I'm okay to follow a genuine inquiry and see where it goes. Looking at this same quote in another way, there's something else about this quote that I think is important. In addition to the Supreme Self is in the Supreme Self, the infinite in the infinite, it also says the peace in the peace. This is something I actually already know to be a fact. I don't have to take that on belief. The peace is in the peace. What I know is that peace and happiness simply are. And compassion, I'll put compassion in there too. And that these are always, always, always available to us. And the only reason that we don't know peace or know happiness or know compassion is because we are choosing to look in another direction. Now what's funny about that statement is I remember many years ago not knowing causeless peace, the peace that just is, not knowing causeless happiness, the happiness that just is, and not knowing compassion, knowing judgment, right? I remember I would scribe with the Holy Spirit, and the Holy Spirit would tell me about the peace that just is, the happiness that just is, and compassion. And they appeared to be so far out of my reach that they appeared to be the goal. And I remember hearing over and over again from Holy Spirit that I was just looking away, that they were right here and I was just looking away. And I couldn't fathom that. It did not seem like they were right here. It did not seem like I was just looking away. It seemed like maybe one thing that could be true is that there was something very, very wrong with me and that I needed to be fixed. And if I was fixed enough, I might know happiness and peace and compassion. But it really seemed to me that the problem was that I was broken rather than the problem being that I was simply looking away from what is always here. And you know what? I did not adopt as a belief that there was such a thing as causeless happiness or causeless peace or compassion instead of judgment. What I did was I accepted those as possibilities. I did not go around spouting at the mouth. In fact, I never once remember myself spouting at the mouth that happiness is causeless. I couldn't fathom it, so I wouldn't say it. But I accepted it as a possibility. And I was willing to find out in my own direct experience if that was true. And the work then wasn't a work of self-inquiry. The work then was the work of inquiring into false beliefs to see that I made them up, to see that they were indeed false beliefs. And so I practiced inquiry on every upset that arose for me, no matter what it was, no matter how much it seemed like that somebody else or something else was the cause of my upset, and no matter how much other people would agree with me, I accepted that if I was upset, it was because of something I was believing. And I accepted that the way to find causeless happiness, if there was indeed such a thing, was to become free of the false beliefs that upset me. And that if I was able to become free of these false beliefs, then I would find out if indeed there was such a thing as causeless happiness, causeless peace, and compassion instead of judgment. And so I undertook the steps very, very diligently. And I mean this with all sincerity, of inquiring into every one of my upsets. In fact, something that left me entirely was blame. I did not blame anyone or anything for my upsets. I seem to know that blaming someone else for my upset, the way I saw it is that if I blame someone else for my upset, I was choosing not to heal. That's exactly how I saw it. If I blamed someone else or something else for my upset, then I was choosing not to heal. And I wasn't making that choice. Actually, I was choosing to heal, which means I let blame fall away. I had no interest in blame. I only had interest in inquiring into my false beliefs to see if I could indeed see through them, to see if they were indeed false, to see if it was true that I made them up. I was willing to accept that as a possibility. And you know, I found out time and time again that they were false beliefs, that I did make them up, and that I was viewing the world through them, and that was the reason for my upset. And belief after belief after belief fell away, and they're still falling away, but at a much slower pace now. They were falling away at a very fast pace for like 5 years, many of them. Now every now and then another one falls away. I think I spoke this morning during our service about a false belief that I had just recently recognized, which was the idea of sacrifice in the idea of too busy. I was blaming busyness, right, for sometimes for sometimes not being able to be perfectly happy, for having a little bit of stress. And I came to see that thought of sacrifice in there as a false belief, and I recently let that go. I talked about that this morning, and just staying in the moment, not thinking about what needs to be done next, just being right here, right now, and right here, right now. There is no sacrifice ever. So I guess the moral of the story is, the way the story is coming out of me today, is that I have made some genuine progress. You know, like if we think of awakening as a mountain, I have, you know, climbed up a certain amount of that mountain in a very genuine way, and I am very genuinely standing at a higher altitude than I once was, also a higher altitude than most other people are at, very genuinely, but there's still some mountain above me. How do I know that there's still mountain above me? How come, you know, people often ask me why I don't say that I am awake, especially since I do experience this wonderful causeless happiness, this causeless peace. You know, I'm very much in the present moment now. The future and the past have really collapsed for me. You know, I don't have attachments to things that most people have attachments to, you know, and so people look at all of this and they want to know, well, if that is my genuine experience, and it is, why don't I call myself awake? Well, I'm going to point back to NTI for a moment. In NTI Luke, somewhere in NTI Luke, it says something about the spiritual path or something similar. And it talks about it talks about keeping going, like not stopping, keeping going until you are the truth. I remember that, you know, to keep going until you are the truth. Those last few words are the quote, until you are the truth. And I remember when I wrote that as the scribe, I didn't know what truth was, but what I did know is I would know it when I knew myself as the truth, right? So, in other words, I don't know exactly what this truth is that I'm aiming for, but when I realize it, I will know it. There was no doubt in my mind that I would know the truth and know that I knew the truth. And therefore, know, for lack of better words, that awakening has occurred. And what I just told you all in the first part of this half hour is I'm still not certain what the truth is. There are still things I'm accepting as possibilities. But, you know, if two people get into an argument, and they do, I mean, we've seen this argument many, many times. If two people get into an argument, one saying the world will disappear and another one saying the world never disappears, I don't know which one's right. I could pick a side and make it into a belief and argue from that side if I wanted to, but I don't know from my own direct experience which one is right. If one person says that the ego dies, the mind dies, and it never ever comes back, manonessa, as Michael Langford calls it, and another person says that never happens, the ego never dies, you just see it's not you, I don't know fully which one's right. I don't know from my own direct experience. So, since I don't know from my own direct experience what the truth is, that means I'm still hiking the mountain. That's what that means. Because NTI says not to stop or to keep going. I don't remember the exact words, that part of it. But not to stop until you are the truth. And what I know is when I know what the truth is, without any doubt whatsoever, I know who's making stuff up and who's clear because of my direct experience. Then I am awake. And again, what a lot of people will do when they're not yet awake, when they don't yet know from direct experience, is they'll pick a side anyway based on what they believe. They'll pick a side and they'll say that's the truth, but it's at the level of belief, and that's just not the same thing as hiking the mountain. If I am arguing for causeless peace, then I don't yet know causeless peace, do I? If I'm arguing about what truth is, then I don't yet know truth. So I think an important thing that's being said here, I think there's several important things that are being said here. One thing is to go for genuine direct experience instead of belief. And accept what masters say as possibilities. You see, if we accept it as possibilities, then we will do the practices necessary to find out for ourselves. But if we don't even accept it as a possibility, when Holy Spirit first told me that there was such a thing as causeless happiness or causeless peace and that I was just looking away, if I had not accepted that as a possibility, I would not have gone through the purification process. I would not have gone through the process of inquiry and rest, accept, and trust, because the truth be told, it seemed easier, you know, based on old habits, it seemed easier just to, you know, kick Laurent out of the house, for example, say, I'm done with you. That was easier than going through the inquiry and purification work. So if I didn't accept it as a possibility that there really was such a thing as causeless happiness or causeless peace, I never would have done the inquiry and the rest, accept, and trust. I never would have done the work in order to find out directly for myself. Now, I will say one other thing. With the mind still being here and still being very alive, it is easier, I think, maybe this is just a personal opinion, it is easier to accept causeless happiness as a possibility than to accept no world as a possibility. And the reason for that is the mind can imagine causeless happiness. It can imagine just being happy no matter what. It can't imagine no world. It can't imagine no mind. It can't imagine the true I that is beyond the false I. And so it's kind of a bigger goal, I guess I'll say, to find out if that is true when it can't even be imagined, right? Maybe it takes a stronger desire to know what is true in order to do the work to find what can't even be imagined, to find out if it is true, to find out if what cannot be imagined is the truth. So in spite of how challenging the purification period is, in spite of how challenging it is to let go of false beliefs, that actually may be easier. And that might be why another thing that I have observed happens. That other thing is, there are other people that I know have genuinely hiked this mountain called awakening. and they have genuinely gained some altitude on this mountain where they are higher than or ahead of most others. And then somehow they seem to start just hanging out at that altitude and they don't continue the hike. Sometimes they even slip down a little bit. And maybe the reason is because, again, the mind can imagine causeless happiness. And so the mind is really, you know, and the mind doesn't like to suffer either, I guess. I mean, it doesn't seem like it to me. The mind doesn't like to suffer either. The mind also complains about suffering. So the mind is willing to get to that point of causeless happiness. And the mind is willing to do that work and get to that goal that it can imagine. But once that causeless happiness is achieved, and life actually now seems a lot easier anyway, because, you know, we're always happy. We're always at peace, and we have compassion for people instead of judging them, right? Everything feels good. Life is good now. Why the heck should mind want to do the hard work, the focused work that is required to go beyond this altitude to something that it cannot even imagine? It doesn't, you know, it doesn't know if it'll like it. Of course, you know, the mind doesn't know if it'll like it, but even more, you know, the teaching is that the mind won't be there. But the mind is still thinking, I don't even know if I'll like it. I can't imagine it. How do I know I'll like it? And even if the mind is willing to kill itself, the mind has to admit it doesn't know how to kill itself. It doesn't know how to end itself, which, of course, is why the teaching is that God takes the last step. But the point is, what can happen after reaching a certain level of happiness, peace, compassion, is that the desire can begin to wane. The intense desire that got us to this altitude can begin to fade because the next goal, if you will, is unimaginable. So, what can keep us going? I don't know if I know the answer for everyone. The answer for me seems to be just that desire to know what is true. Just wanting to know what is true. Truth for truth's sake, as they say. So we haven't looked at the journal yet, so let's read this quote again, and then let's have a look at the journal entry that I wrote back in 2013 when I contemplated this quote the first time. By the way, I'm putting a link to my journal in the sanctuary. So the quote again is, "The Supreme Self is in the Supreme Self, the infinite in the infinite, the peace in peace. That is all there is. Neither I, nor the world, nor the mind." And the journal entry says, "Only self is only self. Anything else is not only self." You know, that reminds me a lot of that line that I referred to in NTI that says something like, "Keep going until you are the truth," right? Until you are the truth. And again, if you are the truth, then you know what the truth is. Well, this says only self is only self. Anything else is not only self. This seems to say that there's still other things that need to fall away, other ideas that need to fall away, other beliefs that need to fall away. And until one has absolutely no beliefs, one cannot know the truth, because it's not only truth. It's truth and, you know, maybe it's truth and a belief that the world will disappear, or truth and a belief that the world won't disappear. Right? But if it's truth and, regardless of what follows the and, the truth is not realized because of the and. And that, of course, reminds me of A Course in Miracles, Lesson 189, Paragraph 7. And I'm sure it reminded you guys of that paragraph as well. Hank read that to us earlier today. We've read this paragraph many, many times, but what the heck? Why don't we read the paragraph one more time? Because what this paragraph is telling us is to let go of the and, regardless of what the and is. And I remember I used to have a problem with that, too. I used to think that I needed to believe the truth. You know, like if I let go of what I learned from A Course in Miracles, or if I let go of what I learned from Holy Spirit, that somehow I would miss the truth. You know, like I had to keep that learning. But that's not what this says. That's not what this says. Only self is only self. Anything else is not only self. So no matter what the belief is, if there's a belief there, that belief is blocking my knowledge of the truth. Everything has to fall away. Okay, so here we go. Let's read this paragraph. Lesson 189, paragraph 7 again. Simply do this. Be still and lay aside all thoughts of what you are and what God is. Now, again, if I'm holding on to my spiritual concepts that I've learned, you know, some of the things I might say to myself, believe it, are things like, I am love. I am the Christ. I am awareness, right? These things can be at the belief level. And this doesn't say let go of worldly ideas, but hold on to those spiritual ideas you learned because they're really, really important. This doesn't say that. It says lay aside all thoughts of what you are. Simply do this, be still and lay aside all thoughts of what you are and what God is. Let me pause and say one more thing before I continue. Recently you may have heard me say, because I've said it a few times in a few different places now, that when I was at the Awakening Together Fall Retreat, I received a new spiritual aspiration. And that new spiritual aspiration is forget everything. Be the spontaneous moment and nothing else. Boy, that sounds a lot like this journal entry, doesn't it? Only self is only self. Anything else is not only self. My aspiration, maybe this aspiration is going to take me up the rest of that mountain, huh? My aspiration, forget everything. Be the spontaneous moment and nothing else. Well, one little tidbit that's interesting about that is the night before, when I was just talking to Jacqueline about what I thought my new spiritual aspiration might be, I said to become more aware of awareness. And in that was the idea that I am awareness at the belief level. Having a belief, an idea that I am awareness, and accepting that as true before I know through direct experience what truth is no different than accepting I am the Christ, I am Spirit, I am love. That's all actually jibber jabber. That's all beliefs that can keep us from knowing the truth, because we've adopted a mental idea of what I am and accepted that and become satisfied with that, and then we just hang out at our current altitude and we don't continue climbing the mountain because we think we know. Fortunately, the next day I went into a deep, genuine contemplation rather than staying at the head level, what I think I want my spiritual aspiration to be. I think maybe I want my spiritual aspiration to be become more aware of awareness, right? Instead of that, the next day I went into a genuine contemplation. And in the genuine contemplation, I received the spiritual aspiration, forget everything. Do you know what that includes? Forget the idea that you have learned that you are awareness. Forget that. Forget that. That's an idea about what you are. Forget everything. That's what the spiritual aspiration said. Forget everything. And so that's what this is saying too. Simply do this. Be still and lay aside all thoughts of what you are and what God is. All concepts you have learned about the world. That would include the idea that the world is going to disappear or the world is not going to disappear. that I have to step into, hey, I don't know. I don't know whether the world is going to disappear or not. Because you know what? I'm not at the top of the mountain yet. I can't pick a side, because if I pick a side, I'm at the level of belief. I don't know the answer, because I don't know for sure what the truth is, because I'm still hiking the mountain. Be still and lay aside all thoughts of what you are and what God is. All concepts you have learned about the world. All images you hold about yourself. Empty your mind of everything. Forget everything. Empty your mind of everything it thinks is either true or false, or good or bad. Of every thought it judges worthy. Wait, I want to pause for a second. This good or bad thing is really going to mess up some people that are close to me, maybe, unless they're catching on very, very quickly. Because I had a definition of good and bad a month and a half ago, and now I don't. Can you imagine that? And so people who are close to me may now become confused, because a month and a half ago, Regina thought this was bad or this was good. And they came to know me. They got to know me unconsciously. It's not like they consciously studied me, but they got to know me based on what I thought was good and bad. And I became somewhat predictable to them. Now that good and bad thing has fallen away, which makes me totally unpredictable. Totally unpredictable. A person who does not have a definition of good and bad cannot be predicted. Jacqueline says she can attest to that. Yeah, there are a few others that are going to be able to attest real soon. Because, you know, things that I before would have defined as good, I don't. And things I would have defined as bad, I don't. And the only thing, you know what's really cool about that? The only thing I have to go on is I have to silence my mind and just feel what my part is right now. My part. What am I to say? What am I to do? And then say it, do it, let go. But I'm not coming from the mental definitions of good and bad anymore. But that's a part of forget everything. That is a part of forget everything. You can't forget everything and hold on to good and bad. You can't. It's impossible. You know, nothing and definitions of good and bad just are not the same thing. Because within definitions of good and bad, there's a whole lot of stuff, right? There's a whole lot of stuff. Nothing is no stuff. So empty your mind of everything it thinks is either true or false. By the way, this true or false thing, this is happening too. I don't know that it's done, but this is happening too, which, you know, a month ago, I might have said, I don't know for sure now, to be honest, but I might have said, yeah, I'll know when I'm awake when the world disappears. Have I said that? I think I might have. I'll know when the world disappears that I'm awake. I might have said that. But do I know that to be true? The world disappears means awake. True. Well, this says, let go of everything you think is either true or false. Or heck, it doesn't even matter if my answer was the opposite. The world will disappear when I am awake. False. Well, heck, this still says, let go of everything you think is either true or false. So either way, I have to step into I don't know. I can't hold on to either belief. Because no matter which side I take, in this debate, this spiritual debate, no matter which side I take, I am blocking myself from the truth. Because only self is only self. Anything else is not only self. The belief that the world would disappear, or the belief that the world will not disappear based on what other teachers have said and based on what I have read, either way, is an obstacle. I have to forget everything. I have to be, I'm sorry guys, for those of you who want me to be really smart, I have to be the dumbest. And I don't mean that in an insulting way. Because when you're the dumbest, there's an intelligence that arises and takes care of you if you're a surrendered dummy. I have to be a fool for the truth. I have to be the fool on the hill, yes. So I can't know these answers that I don't know. I can't pick a side and say, yep, the world's going to disappear, or nope, the world's not going to disappear. I gotta stop all of that. I can't say, yep, he's enlightened. Yep, he's not enlightened. I gotta stop that. He's right. Nope. He's wrong. All of that. How the heck do I know? I don't. So shut up. Shut up. And again, without offense, just shut up. Stick with what you know, which isn't very much. About the only thing you really know is what's being given to you in this moment to know. Right? All right, so I'm not going to know everything, and those of you who want me to know everything, I apologize, because I'm going to disappoint you on purpose, because I don't want to know everything. I want to be empty. Empty your mind of everything it thinks is either true or false, or good or bad, of every thought it judges worthy, and all the ideas of which it is ashamed. Hold on to nothing. Do not bring with you one thought the past has taught. Not even one. Think about how much stuff you have to let go of. Everything. Do not bring with you one thought the past has taught, nor one belief you ever learned before from anything. Not a belief you learned from the Course, not a belief you learned from Michael Langford, not a belief you learned from Adya Shanti, not a belief you learned from, it just doesn't matter. Not one belief you ever learned from anything. Forget this world, forget this Course, and come with wholly empty hands unto your God. But by the way, don't think you know what that God is or isn't. Have no ideas. Wow. Wow. Yay. And you know what's really cool? You know how I know I'm ready for this part of the hike? Because this excites me. And forget everything excites me. Once upon a time, it wouldn't have. And so if it doesn't excite you, I get that. Because once upon a time, it would not have excited me. But now, forget. It excites me, and it sounds doable. It's like, that's something I can do. I can forget everything. I can forget that I learned this. I can forget that I believe this. I can forget that I thought that was right and that was wrong. I know how to forget. Yay! Yay! Oh, that is really exciting. I know how to forget. I really do. I know how to do that. I do. In fact, forgetting sounds a whole lot easier than learning. Learning sounds a little hard. Let's play a song, shall we? I think I have my YouTube open, so why don't we just go back to that? I have this song in both YouTube and iTunes. This song is by Stephen Walters, and it is appropriately named Holding On to Nothing. Oh, we might have a little advertisement first.
Are you frustrated with how clear Windex makes your windows?
Introducing!
By the way, you got to forget that you're supposed to have clean windows. That clean windows are good. Dirty windows are bad. You got to forget that.
Order yours today.
Okay, here we go.
Holding on to nothing and holding nothing away. I wake inside myself, now comes the sea. It's like a flame forever burning, or a diamond in a mirror turning, or a cathedral when there's no one there.
Yeah. So I'm going to let go of the mic, but I will still be hanging out here with y'all for the movie discussion, and then I will be back for the third edition of my mini-series right after the movie discussion. So letting go of the mic for now.
Thank you, Regina.